Hi there, welcome to the World Have Your Say podcast for Wednesday, the 26th of October 2016. It's Ben James in the studio today. The three conversations you'll hear on this download are as follows. Number one, a conversation about what happens to our bodies when we die, a conversation that's come from the Vatican issuing some guidelines to Catholics about cremation and burial. Number two, a conversation from Cameroon, the frustration, the issues arising from a deadly train crash last Friday that killed 79 people at least. In the studio, you'll hear that we had a woman whose brother was on that train and he thankfully survived. And number three, we'll hear some people who use medical marijuana to talk about the changing attitudes in different parts of the US and Canada, including some states where medical marijuana is on the ballot on November the 8th. All of that on this download. Do let us know what you think. The hashtag is WHYS. Hi there. Over the next hour on World Have Your Say, you'll hear a woman whose brother was on the train that crashed in Cameroon last week. He survived, but at least 79 people on board did not. So we'll hear some of the issues that the crash has got people talking about in the country in the aftermath. And if you are listening on 95.7 FM in Bamenda in Cameroon, do take part as you listen. Also, you'll hear people later on discuss their experience of using marijuana for medical reasons. One of the most commented stories on Reddit World News today is a CBC piece about the largest pharmacy chain in Canada applying for a license to distribute marijuana. It's also an issue on a number of state ballots a fortnight today on Election Day in the United States. We'll get into that a little bit later on. Hello there, I'm Ben James. Now, the first conversation, though, you're going to hear is all about what happens to us after we die. It's something we've been talking about through the day on our Facebook page because of new guidelines announced yesterday by the Vatican. They say the ashes of cremated Catholics cannot be kept at home, scattered or divided among family members. It's a two-page instruction by the Vatican's Department on Doctrine. It says the ashes of the dead must be kept in, quote, sacred places such as cemeteries. And it also stressed, reiterated, I guess, that the Roman Catholic Church still prefers burials over cremations. So it's got people talking, not just Catholics, about what their beliefs are, about what should happen to their bodies when they die and why they believe those things. Let's start with a Catholic, though. I'm pleased to say we've got Brendan Thompson with us, who coordinates a group called Catholic Voices that speaks on church matters. Live with us from elsewhere in London, Brendan. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Good to be on the show.
And just tell us from your point of view what you want to happen to you when you die.
Well, it's funny. I hadn't really thought about it before, but me and my wife were talking. I suppose I would like to be buried or cremated, just quite ordinary, really.
and does what the church says in this latest instruction and what it's traditionally said, I mean, it's allowed cremation since the 60s, I think, the Catholic Church. Does that does that inform what you believe about this?
Well, I think it's a kind of confirmation. I think that the church has at least made a definitive decision, because it's quite an emotive issue. I think what the church wants is what we all want, which is that when we die, we are treated with a dignified way that helps us to honour the dead. But there's a kind of added thing when you're a Catholic, which is that we all believe that our actions have meaning. So what does the action of what we do with our remains when we're dead say about our lives? So the church is trying to give a set of guidelines to help priests primarily to say, what is a consistent way, what's a consistent way of acting or dealing with death as a Catholic?
And dignity, that word does come up a lot. Chris tweeted us earlier on, who listens in Eldoret in Kenya, says, yes, burying a person is better than cremation, in my own opinion. It is more dignified. Do you make that distinction, Brendan?
I guess I make the distinction between, so what the document talks about is kind of a tension between the act of scattering your ashes and then the act of kind of keeping someone as a memento in some form or another. I think the former, the document would say, is a bit too impersonal. So if you're kind of just scattering your ashes to the universe, it's too impersonal, the document would say. I think we'd like to believe, or most people want to believe, that, you know, when I get to heaven, I want to see X, Y, and Z, a person, not just kind of I've committed to the universe in an impersonal way. And the other's too privatized. I think that the good thing about scattering is there is a sense of surrender to forces beyond your control, but I think it goes too far. And the other goes too far the other direction. It's too privatized and an ownership. There's no surrender. So keeping it, I think what the Vatican is saying is a nice kind of a middle between the two of saying, actually, when you die, if you get your remains put in a place that's consecrated or especially designated for the dignity of death, it means in posterity. So 50 years, 100 years, people will still be praying for you. And that's a big theme in the church. We pray for the dead. In November, we've got a day, All Souls, coming up, where we popularly, through different festivities, we pray for the dead. So I think this is a way that the church is saying that we'll honour dead people the most, or honour those people who have died.
Well, let's bring a couple more people in to speak to you, Brandon. And also the comments you've been leaving through the day on our Facebook page, BBC World Have Your Say, is where you'll find that thread on Facebook. And for lots of people who tell us, like Efreed tweeting from New Jersey, dead is dead, how you lived your life is what matters. Other people saying this is a very important subject to them. And I saw this from Pam on Facebook saying, cremate me and toss me to the wind. Now that's freedom. Let's bring in a couple more people to speak to Brendan. We'll speak to Rowan Cornbluth, who is an international speaker and wrote a piece called Cremation or Burial, A Jewish View. Hi, Rowan.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for your time, live with us from Israel. And we'll speak also to Barbara Kemis, who is the executive director of something called the Cremation Association of North America, live from Chicago. Barbara, welcome. So tell us why you're not just, I guess, believe in cremation, but campaign for it. Is that what your organization does?
Yes, we promote best practices in cremation. Our association includes members who are funeral homes, crematories, and cemeteries. We were established in 1913 on the premise that cremation is preparation for memorialization. So we're actually very thrilled with the information from the Vatican that provides guidance for treating the dead with dignity after cremation.
So tell us more about what you're thrilled about, to make it clear to Catholics in particular what they should do or what?
Well, we see a rise in cremation in Great Britain. 75% of people choose cremation. In the United States, it's nearly 50%. And we see those numbers rising without a plateau in sight. And people choose cremation for a number of reasons. They love the choices that are offered to them for personalization, so they can honor their loved ones in death the same way they lived, by being a free spirit and scattering, or by having a place of permanent memorialization, or really any option in between. But too often the conversation stops with, just cremate me. I had a similar conversation with my parents. Just cremate me and don't worry about the rest. Well, I do worry about the rest. I love my parents. I honor them. I want to treat them with dignity. So this provides an opportunity to have a conversation about, all right, we choose cremation, but what services, what celebration of life, what funeral rites would you like to have? And where will the permanent memorialization take place?
And just before I bring the others back in, on that point of precisely what happens with the cremated ashes, this instruction says it's not permitted to scatter the ashes of the faithful departed in the air, on land, at sea, or in some other way. And it also talks about not allowing the preservation in mementos, pieces of jewellery, or other objects. Do you agree with that?
I believe it's a personal choice. I think this opens the door for that conversation. Catholics choose cremation at the same rate as the general public. I myself am not Catholic. I'm Protestant, so I have no such guidance from my religious leaders. But ultimately, it becomes a choice of how the family wants to remember their loved ones and their choices to make. And this is more information to guide those choices.
Rowan, come in here and let's hear a conversation about this between the three of you, by all means. What's the view in Judaism? What's your personal view, Rowan?
Well, there's so much to say. I would start out by saying that the main advantage and the wonderful thing about the Vatican releasing these rules is just to have this as a subject of conversation again. As has been said, many people leave this to the last minute, just kind of decide because of what their friends do, and don't really give it much thought. So it's good that we're having this discussion. I think one interesting point that should be mentioned, the fact that it came from the Catholic Church, is that if you were to create two maps, one map, a map of where people are monotheists, where people believe in God, versus people who are polytheists, believe in many gods, or people are atheists or post-Christian or just you don't really believe in God in the traditional sense. That's map number one. And map number two would be where measuring burial and cremation rates, you would find something very interesting, which is that the two maps almost completely correspond, meaning where people believe in one God, there are much higher burial rates. Where people believe in many gods, Far East, or are consider themselves to be secular, atheist, agnostic, or more on the, whatever words you want to use, on the liberal end of the spectrum of religiosity, to use a common term today, there is higher cremation rates. Because people understand, I think, intuitively, and this is the fascinating thing about the Vatican's proclamation, which is not just the second part about the scattering, but that they are repeating something that people haven't heard them say before, which is that burial is preferred. To make it clear, cremation and burial have always been options for 3,000 years. The Bible describes how 3,300 years ago, at the very end of the five books of Moses, that God buries Moses. Cremation existed then. There were many different options of disposal of the dead, and yet God decided to bury. People understand intuitively that the image of God, it's not a physical thing, of course, but there is a physical component to it. And people do understand that there's a certain religious connection to burial. This is why, by the way, since Charlemagne outlawed it in, I think, 780 AD, until even today, the Catholic Church promotes and wants people to bury. Classical Judaism insists on burial, traditional Judaism, Islam, Eastern Orthodox, Russian Orthodox. In other words, the religious world, the monotheist religious world, is very much in the burial camp because of the intuitive understanding of what an image of God is, because of God's choosing to bury, the fact that the Bible left, right, and center again and again, Abraham is buried, Jacob's buried, Rachel is buried, Sarah is buried. Cremation existed. And so I think having this discussion, putting into context, that's the point that I was so glad to hear that the Vatican came out.
So Brendan, do you have that intuition, do you think, based on what de Rohan explains there?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that what the Vatican is saying is that there is a way, preferred burial, but also cremation, that's consistent with a Christian worldview, one that respects the integrity of the body and soul. For as Christians, we believe that there's going to be a resurrection that's both in body and in soul. So the body is important. I also think that it's very important what our other guest was saying, that actually there is a consistency between what you propose to do after death, because I think it is a very visceral thing. We don't have much of a conversation about what we're going to do after I die. I think we try to avoid death. Actually, there's a culture of not really speaking about it. So I think that where we're talking about it and thinking, actually, what do I want my death to say about my beliefs in life? And actually, I think that having a burial in a particular place where it becomes a focus for praying for the dead is good, because if you've got someone, I was thinking about this earlier, if you've got someone as a memento, what's going to happen if in 50 years time, is it going to be passed on? Is it going to be respected? Will the remains just get left in an attic? Will the memory be forgotten? And I was talking to my wife, and she comes from a village in Oxfordshire where two or three generations of her family are in that graveyard. It's become a kind of special place, a place that's reverent. So it's like you're on holy ground, and becomes then a focus for thinking about, reflecting on your ancestry, reflecting on how we can pray for the dead and honor those who have gone before us.
If I may step in, Brendan, I was listening to you carefully. This is Daron speaking. I find it a little bit risky, to be honest, to speak about the sort of the visiting of the grave or the importance of the physical place for two reasons, or maybe more. I'll just share them quickly. First of all, the passage that I shared with you from the end of the Bible about Moses, it says very clearly that God hid the place of Moses' burial. And no one knows where it is. It's somewhere on the east bank of the Jordan River. And God did not want it to be known because he was afraid it would be, basically understand, he was afraid it would be a place of idol worship, meaning that it doesn't matter. Visiting a grave is a beautiful thing. I connect to it I don't do it every day, obviously, but I connect to it. But that's not the main reason for burial at all. Furthermore, sometimes it works in the opposite argument, and this is why one has to be careful with what I'm saying. Florida, the state of Florida in the United States, has one of the highest cremation rates in the U.S. And one of the reasons given, which makes a lot of sense, is that there are so many retirees who go down to Florida, and their families, their children don't live there. They know nobody's going to visit the grave. So they say, they figure, why bother having a grave? So I think it's important to distinguish between the reasons for burial and
This is Barbara, and I'd like to jump in.
Yeah, go ahead, Barbara.
Thank you. I think that was a very important point. And the states in the United States with the highest cremation rates are states like Florida, Nevada, Arizona, where many people who live there have moved there in retirement or moved there for work or school or what have you. And the ties to those hometowns just aren't there anymore. You don't have two or three generations buried in one cemetery because you have people. My family is a perfect example of this. We have family in 9 states, and cremation has been a tradition in my family for over 20 years because when someone dies, it's very difficult to come together in a short period of time and grieve together. Or if it's a sudden death, like an accident or a crime, it takes a while to figure out the proper way to memorialize that loved one. And I need to point out that cremated remains can be buried as well. And that your point about having a place that becomes a shrine, I suppose, is a risk. But I think having a permanent place, a permanent memorialization, is so essential. There is a rampant trend in the United States of people taking cremated remains home and never having the conversation of what to do next. And it's unbelievable. I have conversations all the time where they have 4 or 5 sets of cremated remains at home, and they haven't had that conversation about where to place them permanently. Are they going to pass them on to their children? What's going to happen? And so this is a very important moment. The Vatican has opened a conversation that is so essential.
And let's bring a couple more people to join in with it on this edition of World Have Your Say as we discuss what we'd all like to do with our bodies when we die, what we hope for them. Cremation, burial, we're talking about. Jorge got in touch with us on Twitter earlier on from Augusta, Georgia, saying with land space issues, burial is expensive and wasteful. I wish to have mine put upon the sea. I sailed the seas and the ocean is my respite, said Jorge. Thanks very much indeed for getting in touch from Georgia. We're going to go live to Kampala, Uganda now to speak to Jude, who is a Catholic there. Jude, what's your take on this?
I think, firstly, I do not think the guidelines which were just issued yesterday, they emphasize an important point which has always been covered in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. You know, since the clarification in the 1960s, I think 1963, that cremation per se is not opposed to Christian belief, but the danger is cremation, if it flows out of motives that kind of demonstrate unbelief in the resurrection of the body or in, you know, pantheistic beliefs, then it becomes problematic. But for us, like here in Uganda, cremation is something which is, it's a practice which is alien to most cultures here. So I do not see, not many people will even notice these norms, at least here in Uganda. The cremations tend to be more popular, I think, among the Indian community. That's why I've noticed it here.
So what is it about what you feel about what you want to happen to your body when you're gone that means burial is important to you? I mean, it's obviously tradition and culture there, but is there something that you feel is important that your body goes through that process?
I definitely would prefer a burial of the body as opposed to a cremation, mainly because, well, that's what I see, that's what we are used to, and most importantly, that's what even the church encourages for very good reasons that include the fact that, you know, to be able to promote, you know, respectful veneration even of the bodies of our deceased brothers and sisters. It tends to be much more practical, and especially because, you know, in the Catholic Church, for instance, we tend to have you know, this veneration, for example, of the martyrs and of the saints. Once we know their remains are in a specific place, you know, that's why actually the norms encourage that, you know, the remains should be kept in a separate place or in a cemetery. there's a way in which they help to enhance even that Christian belief in veneration of the saints and the martyrs.
Jude, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us from Kampala. I just have to put in there because we've got a couple more people who are waiting to speak. And yes, I will certainly bring you back in a moment, whoever was coming in there. But I just want to also bring in Fatima, who is live with us from Ontario, who is a Muslim. Fatima, welcome to the programme.
Hi, thank you.
And tell us your story, because I think your thinking about all of this is very interesting based on what's happened to you through your life. Tell us about it.
Well, I am a 2-time liver transplant recipient. So I've had my first transplant was from a living donor, my mom, when I was 11. And then the recent one was about 2 years ago on September 23rd, 2014.
Gosh, so how does that affect your thinking about what happens to your body when you're gone?
Well, it affects it a lot because I've learned through everything, like about organ donation and about everything that, like, there's so many people out there who are waiting and there's so many myths and misconceptions out there. And so that's me personally. I would like to donate my organs after I pass, just because I know how many people I can help.
Which I guess doesn't necessarily preclude then the rest of you being either cremated or buried. Do you have any thoughts on that?
So it shouldn't preclude any burial or cremation. So you're able to have like a fully like open casket if you like, or you can be cremated if you like, whichever. I think that even with organ donation, you can have like any type of burial you would wish.
So I guess from the sounds of it, the final fate of your body is less important than what it can do for others before that happens, the act of donating what you're able to. I want to bring in Asim Padella as well, who is an emergency medicine doctor and director of an initiative on Islam and medicine at the University of Chicago in Ohio, though, today. Asim, thanks for being there. Thanks for waiting. Take on what you've just heard and as a doctor, that the balance between donation, cremation, burial, how that all works?
So I think that the way that we treat our dead betrays significance of who we think we are and also what we think our ultimate end would be. And so with my colleagues here, you know, I would say that from the Islamic perspective, having your body buried intact is pretty important, because in the Islamic sense, the body is not just the vessel for the soul, right, that allows you to have moral culpability and gain the pleasures and do good works. There's also a special creation from God, right? The body, the Quran actually says that, uses the term that created by God's hand. There's also a relation from the prophetic Sunnah about being created in God's image, similar to the Judeo-Christian tradition. So in any case, it betrays that, you know, that we are a special creation, and that special creation deserves certain types of dignity. And for us, in the Muslim tradition, that comes from Cain and Abel, where a bird taught Cain how to bury Abel. And so from that point on, we bury our dead. Cremation is allowed for certain circumstances when there's money issues or there's issues of disease and things like that, but it's not the norm. And as it relates to organ donation, I think, previous caller sort of said that organ donation doesn't preclude you having a burial or, there's some other reason that you can't, again, with diseases or whatever else might be. So I think that that's the normative position in Islam, that we should bury our dead because we think of them as a special creation, or this body is a special thing that has dignity even after the soul has left, and that our ultimate end is to be resurrected, right? So the body will be resurrected and it'll be accounted for its deeds in this world. So that's the normative position.
It's a really thought-provoking conversation, and thanks for your contribution to it, Asim. We heard from Asim, from Fatima, from Jude, Barbara, Darowan and Brendan. We heard there from Christians, Muslims, a Jewish guest as well. Viraj in Nepal posted on Facebook, Hindus burn their dead ones with rituals. Of late, people are preferring to cremate in an electronic furnace to protect the environment, he says. So I wonder, around the world, are you changing your mind about what happens when you die because of modern pressures, the environment that Viraj talks about there, space other people talks about too, and money? Do continue that conversation. BBC World Have Your Say on Facebook. We'll be back in a few minutes' time. Hi there, welcome back to World Have Your Say live on the BBC World Service. It's Ben James with you today, and thanks for all of your comments, your contributions to that conversation, all about the Catholic Church and what it said about cremation and burial, and your conversations from lots of different perspectives about how you feel about that when it comes to your own life and death. Kadia in Kingston tweeted us from Jamaica, personally, I'd rather be buried than cremated. It's a tradition in my family that we bury, not cremate, actually. Do carry on that conversation, because it's got us talking about some really interesting issues there. We'll talk also later on this half hour on the programme about medical marijuana, and here's some experiences from people who use marijuana for medical reasons. There's a story about Canada's largest pharmacy chain formally applying to be a distributor of medical marijuana, and it's a conversation in the United States at the moment, with their four US states having some question on their ballots 2 weeks today on election day, getting closer there, isn't it? All about medical marijuana in one form or another. So we'll reflect some of that conversation as we speak to our guests in about 15, 20 minutes or so. We are going to start, though, by talking about a conversation that's been ongoing since Friday from Cameroon, all about a train crash that you'll have heard reported on the BBC, a crash that killed at least 79 people. It wounded 600 more. It was travelling from the capital Yaoundé to Douala, which is the port city on the coast. The carriages flipped over at high speed. And this crash and its aftermath has started lots and lots of conversations in that country and about that country, not just to do with the crash itself. Let me start by introducing you to Betty Abeng, who's sitting opposite me here in the studio. Betty, it's great to have you here. You're from Douala, but you are based in London at the moment. Good to have you here.
And oh, thank you very much.
Your brother was on the train, I understand.
Oh, yes, yes. My brother was on the train, and on that day was actually started like a day like any other day. And so initially the news got to me that there was there had been a collapse of part of the major route that leads between Douala and Yaoundé. And after phoning my family members, I was informed that my brother was actually in Yaoundé and that he was planning to return with a train. And very shortly after that, I received a text message from a friend saying actually that there was a derailment, which really came to me as a shock. First of all, you know, a disbelief, and just hoping that he was okay, which I contacted him and he sent me a text saying, yes, the roads, there has been a collapse, but I'm taking the train. And then a few hours later, I actually ascertained that he was on that train. And I cannot begin to describe the feeling of the time it took and the time it took between the time when I actually got through to him and finding out that he was okay, and sort of the story unfolding on social media in the way that it was. And there were pictures being circulated of the wreckage, and it was a very, very difficult time.
I'm sure. And however long it took, it must have felt like a lifetime, not knowing how he was.
It was.
When did you manage to get through and be sure that he wasn't among the victims?
So it was from the time I found out that he was on the train to actually getting through to him, it took about 5 hours. And when I did get through to him, I mean, to be honest, the only words I could mutter were, "Brother, I love you." And all he said was, "I love you too." And once he said that, he switched off the phone. Then I contacted my cousin, who then informed me of the actual ordeal, and him having to use his own bare hands almost to break out of the train. And then once he found out that he was actually alive, he then thought, well, he's not going to let other people suffer and die if he can be of help. And so he went back in and tried to be of help to others as well. So I'm extremely grateful for that. But I'm also, my heart goes out to those families who are still looking for their loved ones, for those who have not been able to identify the bodies of those who they've lost, and for those who are still traumatized from this very bad catastrophe, I would say.
What did he tell you or the rest of your family about what happened the moment the crash happened?
Well, to be honest, it was, he's not been able to actually describe his actual emotions at the time, but but the sheer horror is all that he's been able to talk about. He's obviously experienced something which he's never experienced in his whole life. It's something you wish no one else would experience. And it's just the sheer horror of the area. It was a muddy area. It had been raining for a couple of days, and it was very muddy. And so you had people who had been, you know, who had been thrown on different sides of the train in mud, and there was no proper initial response. So there was no response whatsoever. So the medical team didn't arrive till very, you know, late hours, and people had to basically just help themselves. And also the train was overpacked. So that's obviously an issue that has to be addressed. You would understand that because of the road collapse, there would be people, you know, the volume of passengers would increase on the train. But then were proper security measures put in place to ensure that was made possible? Were they able to contact the relevant authorities and get approval for that? And who is responsible? I think these are questions that we have to really, really ask ourselves.
Well, let's get into some of those questions. And we'll speak in a moment to Jude, who lives in Kumbo in the northwest of Cameroon. Jude, hi there.
Hi.
Good to have you there. And we'll also speak to a familiar voice on the BBC reporting from Cameroon, Randy Josaha, who is a reporter based in Yaoundé. You've been covering the crash and speaking to families, Randy. Good to have you on World Have Your Say. What do we know about what actually happened here?
Sorry, is that a question for me?
It is. It's for Randy. Go ahead.
Okay. What we know about now is that the train left Yaoundé a little bit late, and there was this influx of travelers because they couldn't go to Douala following the collapse of a bridge on the Yaoundé-Douala highway. So they all trooped to the train station. And the Minister of Transport, Edgar Allen Mebengo, has been on the air. And he actually said he had asked the railway authorities to take measures to accommodate the passengers.
Randy, sorry to cut you short, but he also first denied reports. He denied reports of there having been any landslide in the first, any derailment of a train in the first place, from what I gathered, the Minister Edgar Mebengo.
Absolutely. In the morning, the minister actually said there had been rumors and wrong information on the social media talking about the derailment of a train. And he was on air on state radio at around about 1 o'clock. Whilst he was denying this incident, the railway authorities say that is when the train actually derailed. So it's a bit difficult to say. Was it just a coincidence that people were saying in the morning that a train had derailed when it really had not? Mm. Well, the minister actually came back in the evening to say that the train had actually derailed in the afternoon. But when, by the time he was doing the disclaimer on air, no derailment had taken place.
And one thing that we've heard today, Randy, is something from the official of the French company that runs the railway line that said that the train was travelling at, quote, an unusually high speed. Is that something that you'd been hearing before that official from that company gave that confirmation?
Oh, yes. I spoke to some people who were on the train. And they said they thought at one moment the train was going rather too fast. Then they could hear some noises, which made them think that maybe the driver was trying to stop. And they could also get a smell, which some people say it might have been a brake fluid kind of that was smelling. Within a moment, the train derailed. And so
Randy, can I just say something? I've been told the president has requested a 30-day investigation. Well, the period of 30 days, and an investigation has been launched, and the results are supposed to be got then. And just now we're hearing from Bolloré
which is the company, and
they are actually saying that they're part of the problem was high speed, and without being rude, I think this is not the first statement they should be making. They should be expressing their condolences to the families on Cameroon national television. I just think now it's not just because I have family members who are involved, but I think the whole response from both Bolloré and our government has been totally appalling.
And we'll get into some of that with Jude, who's waiting to speak to us in Kumbo. We'll speak to somebody as well in a moment who's written an article about what lessons might be learnt from this. So you talked about Bolloré. The train was operated by Camrail, which is a local subcontractor of that French company. Jude, come in here. What are the questions, what are the issues that you think this whole story has raised in Cameroon?
I think the whole train tragedy in Eseka has raised the question of infrastructure, which is really terrible in Cameroon, to be honest. And I think a lot of people are actually questioning why a supposed highway, which I don't always want to call highway because there's actually no highway between Douala and Yaoundé.
No, it's a
dead road.
It is.
And these are the two major cities, really.
Yes, the biggest.
Of course, it's a dead road. And now we have this problem on a highway, and now everybody has to travel by train from Yaoundé to Douala, and now we have this tragic incident. People are bound to ask so many questions, and the questions in Cameroon, as far as I know, will never have answers. Because if I look at, you talked a couple of moments ago about the commission that was set up to look into the 30-day commission that was set up to look into the train tragedy. And from what I see on the article, which I have right here in front of me, it's made up of politicians, no technicians. You have the Prime Minister, the Minister of Justice, the Minister in charge of whatever, and the Minister of Defense, and they are politicians. They are not technicians. How are they going to bring out an unbiased report? That's my question. That's the question on everybody's lips.
That's a good question, Jude. And also, one of the things I was made aware of was the fact that the area wasn't cordoned off. How do you conduct an investigation without actually ensuring that you have secured the area where the actual incident took place? And up till now, there's still people who are unaccounted for, and we're just going into. Oh, it's almost going to be a week on Friday since the accident happened, and that up till today, there are people who have loved ones who are unaccounted for.
If you look at the initial response of the government when this happened, you will start to ask questions, and we know those questions will never have answers, because if the president of a country, the president of Cameroon, if he deemed it fit to address the nation via Facebook, I don't take that lightly. I didn't have any family, no relative in whatever, but I feel the pain of whoever might have lost a relative, a friend, or anybody from his town. You address the nation through Facebook. It took you 2 days to come back to the country. And when you arrived, there was a normal pomp and pageantry that awaits him at the airport.
And there's a piece on Quartz Africa about Paul Biya, who is the president of Cameroon and has been since 1982, that he, as you said, posted on Facebook his condolences to the families of those involved. He was out of the country at the time, and some Cameroonians, as you've just been hearing, wondering whether he should have come back home more quickly. He's been criticised in the past, says Quartz, for his long stays before. Randy, you wanted to come back in there. How much are people talking about the role of the president and how he has reacted to what happened last Friday?
Well, before the president made his statement, he had been out of the country for 37 days, and people were very worried about that. He came in a day after the accident and declared a national day of mourning. People were happy with that. But now that he has named members of the Commission of Inquiry, many people in Cameroon
especially yesterday I spoke to the main opposition chairman, John Frunzi, who said in this country, when the government wants to hide something, it will create a commission of inquiry. And the members of this commission are all top government people. It's headed by the prime minister. But the minister of transport, who has been in a controversy in this issue, has been left out of the commission.
Let's let Randy finish. Hang on. Okay. Go on, Randy. Yeah.
Sorry, Randy.
Yes. The commission, when it finishes its report, its investigation, it will forward the report to the president, who would have the... it's only him who will be able to release the results. But if you look like in other occasions where election results are sent to him, he would only release it several months or even years after. So people are a bit concerned that the investigation results might not become public very soon. And on the issue of the route to Douala, which collapsed, the culverts along this road, there are so many of them, and they've been there for 30 years. And people have been asking, government knows the lifespan of the bridges, of the road itself, and they know that by this time it should have deteriorated. Well, the Minister of Works has been on the air, and he said they're actually working on the fires, and that contractors were soon to get replacing all these culverts on the Yaoundé-Douala Highway. And actually, a superhighway is right now being constructed to link these two cities, which are the biggest in Cameroon.
Go on, Betty. Go on. You want to come in there. Go on. Yeah, go on, Betty.
Randy, isn't it also, I mean, one of the things that stands out for me in this whole inquiry is, because I have taken that train, and it is a requirement by law to provide your identification once you are intending to travel. So before you purchase a ticket, they need a name. There are people whom I watched in a report on one of our local television stations who says they got tickets. The tickets were not even checked. So they just basically got on a train so that an inquiry should start by ascertaining how many people were actually on board those trains. And we haven't heard anything about that reason. I just think any inquiry is sure to be flawed. And we don't even have the numbers, to be honest, of people, of casualties.
Oh, yes. Those are issues which the Commission of Inquiry will have to look into. Also learned that people got on the train, that it was overcrowded. 8 coaches were added to it. The railway authorities tell me it is a normal thing they do during peak periods like Christmas and New Year. But what they are saying is that the overloading or overspeeding would not have been at the center of at the cause of this of this accident.
The railway is from colonial. The railway is from colonial days, and you cannot bring up. I mean, Bolloré is saying they have now they've provided brand new trains for a rail track that was built in the colonial days. I think there's a serious problem here, and it stems from the very, very nature of that railway itself and other infrastructure in the country. As you rightly said, a bridge which has been there for 30 years, it's got a lifespan, and nothing was done to ensure that such a highly important and highly used route was not maintained.
We had a long WhatsApp message from someone called Mirabelle in Cameroon just before we got on air, and she was making a series of points about the key issues here. One of them was that she says most assets like buildings, train stations, etc., are mostly those constructed since the days from the days of the previous president. And as I said, there hasn't been a previous president in Cameroon since 1982. Jude, what was the point you wanted to make? Come in there.
Hi, this is Jude. I wanted to make a couple of points. I have listened to Randy. And he says, the minister said the files were still on his table and they are working to change the culverts. If you want to avert such incidences in the future, you need to do the whole road all over again. Mm-hmm. You change the culverts in a 30-year-old road, a and you wanted to, and they wanted to function. And you have to know that there's a lot of traffic on this stretch of road because the trucks that carry the timber from the forest and other heavy duty vehicles, they ply this road. So you want to change the culverts, but not the road. That's the problem Cameroon has. The second thing is, I know someone personally, I've spoken to him personally. He was in Yaoundé and wanted to, and was heading to Douala. When he came to purchase a train ticket, they said, okay, no, you don't have to pay now. You will pay when you arrive in Douala. So that's the more reason why this train was overloaded, because people were just getting in and in and in, and there was no control. And now I ask myself, this has never happened. You have to pay for a train ticket before you travel. You don't get into the train and you pay at your destination.
Interesting stuff. Jude, thank you very much indeed for taking part from Kumbo in the northwest of Cameroon. Now, thank you to Randy as well. Thank you also to you, Betty, for coming in, and all the best to your brother. I hope he's doing well and makes a full recovery. So thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
And you hear there the frustration of many in Cameroon and some of the issues being raised there. If you are listening there and you want to get in touch with us on WhatsApp to give your take on this story, you can. The number we use for WhatsApp is +44 77 30 75 19 25, and you can find that online as well. You're listening to World Have Your Say. We're live here on the BBC World Service, and just for the final few minutes of the programme, we're going to check into a story that was, lots of people were clicking on it really high up on the World News subreddit earlier on. Now we found it at the top on Reddit, that Canada's largest pharmacy chain has formally applied to be a distributor of medical marijuana, and that issue is a big conversation online also because of four ballots in the US elections on November the 8th. Four states are talking about this issue. So we thought we'd hear from some people who use marijuana for medical purposes and hear about their experiences. Let's speak to Terry, who is in Toronto. And Terry, I think you've been using marijuana for decades. Why?
I consume marijuana for the prevention and for the control of epileptic convulsive disorder.
And tell us about what you believe that it does for your epilepsy.
Basically, I've seen days with suffering status epilepticus where you seizure after seizure, yet after a couple of joints, I have relief within a couple of minutes, which is terrific when compared to other barbaric, experimental pharmaceuticals and experimental brain surgeries and that kind of stuff.
And so to be clear, you are smoking it like many recreational users might smoke it.
Exactly.
Let's bring in Gaynell as well, who's live with us from California. Gaynell, tell us your story.
Hi, I'm a twice cancer survivor, breast and colon, and have been recommended medical cannabis for my treatments post-cancer. I take tinctures, just like Bach remedies, underneath the tongue. I do not smoke flowers. And the medical efficacy of high CBD strains here in California that have low THC, which are non-psychoactive strains. A lot of cancer patients, epileptic patients, Alzheimer's, dementia, glaucoma, arthritis. We have 2,600 strains here in California. We've had medical compassionate laws since 1997. And we have 9 more states on the ballot this November 8th. It's a very hot issue here in the United States. And it's really regarded as medicine, not as a intoxicant.
And one of those states is Florida, I believe, where June is waiting to speak to us. June, you are somebody with multiple sclerosis. Welcome to the program. And tell us where you stand on this and how the ballot coming up might affect that.
Oh, for me, it will be a big change. Right now, I'm, of course, in the illegal market. And what I do is I've lost my appetite about a decade ago. So I use marijuana as an appetite stimulant. I eat one meal a day, which is about midnight generally. So I consume marijuana for that, also for pain and a few other issues that I have. And so I'm on the market out looking for extracts right now to cook with. I bake cookies and eat those in the evening, and it's just really difficult because it's hard to find, and you don't know who you're dealing with, and it's not that the people are dishonest or anything like that. It's just hard to find, and I don't know anyone in town, and so I'm looking around, and then when the extracts aren't available, I am completely dependent on the herb, which is fine. I don't mind that, but I just, it's, you're not only a criminal, but you're not, things aren't available to you as you would like them to be, and it just makes it difficult, you know.
And so if this law goes through, if the ballot is successful from your point of view, and certainly not necessarily that it will, how would that change your life, do you think?
Oh, well, I won't have to be, you know, dodging around looking for people that look like they might have something that, you know, I might want to buy, for one, and then I won't be a criminal. It will just be available as, you know, something that I can buy.
Terry in Toronto, do you think it will make a big difference in Canada if this large chain of pharmacies does start stocking it? Does it mean attitudes are changing?
That depends. Depends on the quality. Also depends on the price. If they're going to give us stuff that's low in therapeutic levels, say THC or CBD or whatever, I can't see any money being made. I know for a fact in Canada, when we struck our laws unconstitutional back in 97 and 2000, the government put out $5 million towards prairie plant systems, and that was a complete failure because people were totally dissatisfied with the product they're putting out.
It's interesting stuff. And I just saw one shopper actually quoted in the CBC piece on this saying, it seems very off-brand. It's got a pharmacy, so kind of I guess it's okay, but it seems a little weird. So not everybody sold on the idea of that being sold in pharmacies. Our three guests there would probably disagree with that, though. Thanks very much indeed for taking part, and we'll follow that law's progress.